Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROSE.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, PROSE.com/morbidology.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
More Than a Podcast is a weekly comedy podcast hosted by three lifelong friends, and they've sponsored this episode of Morbidology. Each week, Charles, Jack, and Luke talk about current events as well as old memories, stories, food, and pretty much anything else that you can think about. What's amazing about More Than a Podcast is that you truly feel like you're part of the gang, just sitting around, cracking jokes, and chewing the fat. If you're looking for an episode to start with, I'd like to recommend episode 6, Calling an Ambulance During Church. In addition to the podcast, they also film YouTube and wedding videos and conduct interviews with family and friends to learn about their field of work. So make sure you check out More Than a Podcast. It's available anywhere you listen to podcasts or head on over to morethan.media/podcast. I've included a link in the description. Hopefully you enjoy it as much as I do. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. It's a sad fact that there is a clear pattern when it comes to the media. Too often, they more intensively cover the disappearances or abductions of young white women, even more so if they are in the upper middle class or of a higher social status. But crime does not discriminate. Anybody can become a victim, regardless of race, wealth, or social status. When 16-year-old Felicia Barnes disappeared in Baltimore, Maryland, over the Christmas period of 2010, many referred to the case as Baltimore's Natalie Holloway, but the stark difference in media coverage between the two was overwhelming. The difference was that Natalie was white and Felicia was African American. Felicia Barnes was a 16-year-old track star and honors student at Union Academy in Monroe, North Carolina. Her friends said she had the kind of personality that would light up any room. Quote, "That smile, you can't beat it. It was a huge smile," end quote, said her friend Sandy Thomas. She was bubbly, optimistic, and loud, but as her friend said, in a good way. Felicia loved nothing more than reading a good book or going to drama club, where she enjoyed theatre. To her friends, she was known as Fifi. They often joked that Felicia didn't understand the movie Inception and said that she was so clumsy that she often tripped over her own feet. She lived with her mother, Janice Salas. Janice and Felicia's father, Russell Barnes, had separated, and Russell lived in Atlanta, Georgia. Felicia had four half-siblings, Dina, Kelly, and Brian, who lived in Baltimore, Maryland, and Chantel, who lived in New York. Felicia was a straight-A student who was on track to graduate early. She had already been accepted into Queen's University, Belmont Abbey, Mars Hill College, and Lenoir Rhine, but she was waiting for one from Towson University in Baltimore, where she had hoped to study psychiatry or medicine. In her spare time, Felicia did community service at a daycare center and tutored fellow students in need of academic help. Felicia and her half-siblings hadn't been in contact for a number of years. In fact, Felicia hadn't seen her father in 8 years. Janice had encouraged Felicia to reach out to that side of the family on Facebook in a bid to reconnect. Quote, "As a mother, I didn't want my daughter not knowing who the other side of her DNA is. I didn't want her going from man to man looking for her father in relationships, so I encouraged her to look for her half-sisters online and maybe she could find her father that way," end quote, said Janice. Then in 2008, Felicia reconnected with her half-siblings and her father. She had travelled to Baltimore several times to visit, and when they finally met up again, it was like nothing had ever changed. Quote, "As soon as we got in contact with her, it was like a bond immediately," end quote, said Dina, while Brian echoed this sentiment. Quote, "It was our little sister as soon as we met her," end quote. After visiting Baltimore several times, Felicia asked her mother if she could go down and stay for a couple of weeks. Janice, understandably, had worried. Felicia was extremely close to her mother, and she was worried about her being away for that long. Eventually, Janice agreed to let Felicia visit over Christmas in 2010, and Felicia was ecstatic. In Baltimore, Felicia was staying in Dina's apartment off Reisterstown Road near Pikesville. Dina's ex-boyfriend, Michael Johnson, had been living in the apartment, but he was in the process of moving out. On Christmas Day of 2010, Felicia phoned her mother back home to wish her a happy holiday and let her know what a great time she was having with her sisters. They had spent much of their time with their grandmother and spent the remainder of the trip catching up and doing the kind of things that regular sisters do. Going shopping, getting their hair done, staying up late and watching movies. Felicia told her mother that she missed her greatly, and Janice joked that she wouldn't be going anywhere over Christmas next year because she had missed her so much.
I told her how sad that I was because all of the children were gone and that next year that they're not going to be able to go because I was lonely without them.
On the 28th of December, Dina returned home from work to discover that Felicia was missing. Dina had left Felicia asleep in bed when she left for work at 8:45 a.m., Later on in the morning, they were messaging each other, as well as their other sister, Kelly. They had planned to get their hair done later on and Kelly would be picking Felicia up from Dana's apartment. Upon discovering that Felicia wasn't in the apartment, Dana called Kelly to see if she had heard from her. Quote, "She knew I was coming to get her from work, but the last time I actually heard from her was at 11:08 that morning. That was the last time she responded to any of my messages," end quote, said Kelly. The last time that Dana had heard from Felicia was at around 12:30 p.m. when she texted Dana to let her know that she was hungry and was going to the shop to get some food. Both Dana and Kelly tried to call Felicia, but her phone went straight to voicemail.
And I called her phone numerous times, repeatedly, like, hang up, call back, hang up, call back. I was panicking at the point where I couldn't find her. Like, I'd called everybody I could think of, and no one had heard from her, and I couldn't reach her. That's immediate panic. It's not like Felicia. Yeah, that didn't take long at all for me to call the police. It was, like, within an hour.
Fear immediately washed over. Felicia was their baby sister, and it was their duty to care for her while she was visiting. Dana tried to call Michael, who had been at the apartment that morning, but he didn't reply until after 7 p.m. According to Michael, he left the apartment at 1:30 p.m., and when he left, Felicia was fast asleep on the couch. At 7:30 p.m., the sisters called police to report Felicia missing. Immediately, police were concerned. Too often, in situations such as this, where a teenager disappears, police can simply shrug them off as runaways. But thankfully, that wasn't the case with Felicia's disappearance. Felicia had never ran away before, and police announced that there were several items left behind which could have indicated foul play. Both Janice and Russell travelled to Baltimore to assist in the search for their daughter. Quote, "She has no reason to run away. She's a happy girl and she loved being here. I think somebody took her," end quote, said Janice. Police asked the public to keep an eye out for Felicia, stating that she was around 5 feet 8 inches tall and around 120 pounds. The last time she was seen, she was wearing a navy blue pea coat with a hood, a turquoise thermal shirt, blue jeans and white slippers. Quote, "She wouldn't leave the house in some slippers," end quote, said Janice. Police also announced that Felicia's purse, money and credit card had been left behind in her sister's apartment, and this caused great concern. The community rallied around the Barnes family, offering assistance and a shoulder to lean on. Quote, "To hear the distress in Felicia's mother's voice, it's very stressful. Felicia is like a daughter," end quote, said family friend Angela Timms. They went door to door handing out missing person flyers, and a Facebook page called Pray for Felicia Barnes was even created and quickly swelled to over 850 members. Over the next few days, police received numerous tips from local people who had reported that they had seen Felicia in the area. They were told to look in rough neighbourhoods and drug-infested areas. Each lead was extensively investigated, but police were unable to confirm any of the sightings. In the beginning of January, police announced that they feared that Felicia may have been abducted. The search was upped and homicide detectives were called in to assist in the case. Bloodhounds assisted officers as they searched throughout Baltimore and the surrounding area while a police helicopter hovered overhead. They checked hospital and emergency shelter records and even checked airline records to make sure that Felicia hadn't caught a flight somewhere, but to no avail. Union Academy students returned from their winter break, but Felicia's absence was noted. The school held a prayer vigil outside of the school on the Monday, and counselors were made available to all students. Quote, "Normally you turn the corner at the stairs and you'll hear her talking, laughing. Today, it was just quiet. It was weird," end quote, recollected Felicia's friend, James Money. On their return to school, they all wore purple ribbons for Felicia, and they also left posters in the hallways where students could leave comments to show Felicia upon her return. Quote, "Can't wait to see your smiling face in these hallways again," end quote, read one optimistic post. As the search was underway, Janice told several TV stations that Dana had informed her that a number of men had been in and out of her apartment recently. Quote, "Dana misled me. I'm a very protective mother. She assured me it would just be her and Felicia, but when I went up there Thursday night, I found out otherwise. She gave me the names of 20 different guys who had gone in and out of the apartment, end quote, said Janice. Following this revelation, fears grew even further that Felicia had been a victim of foul play. Her phone and her Facebook hadn't been used since she vanished, and Felicia was an avid Facebook user. In fact, her phone had been switched off on the day she disappeared, and it hadn't been turned on since. A week passed with no resolution. As week two approached, the FBI were called in. There was a flurry of activity near Leakin Park shortly thereafter. They were alerted to the area after somebody commented on a Baltimore Sun article about Felicia's disappearance, stating, quote, "Humor me. Somebody pop over to the 4000 block of Franklin Town Road and look up the southward shoulder," end quote. The area was searched extensively, including the stream and woodland, but turned up nothing. Baltimore police also searched Dina's apartment more extensively after it was revealed that a number of men had come in and out of the residence while Felicia was staying here. However, the search also turned up nothing. There was no evidence of blood or no sign of a struggle. Even more sinister information came out shortly after the second search, when Chantal, Felicia's sister in New York, said that before Felicia disappeared, she had confided in her that while staying with Dina, she had been given alcohol and marijuana. She also said that numerous men had been in the apartment and one had made a sexual advancement towards her and she rejected him. With this new information, Janice stated, quote, "I am very strict when it comes to boys being around her. I am very, very pissed at this point," end quote. Russell responded to this and criticized his ex-wife for speaking out, saying that he was worried that the family rift would undercut attempts to attract attention for the search. Police soon enough announced that they had ruled out that Felicia had run away, was under emotional distress, or had a domestic issue. They were wanting to track down and question every single person who had been in contact with Felicia in the hours leading up to her disappearance, adding that every person was considered a person of interest. Dina's apartment was apparently more like a college apartment, wherein numerous people came in and out, often sleeping on the floor or on the couch. Quote, "Felicia's sister is college age and she has a lot of friends coming in and out. I would describe it probably like a dorm room setting. They party, maybe do a little drinking, but there is no activity there that concerned us. No illicit drug use or sex parties or anything ridiculous. She was just a young lady with a lot of friends, and that makes our job difficult," end quote, announced a police spokesman. With each day that passed, the outcome of Felicia's disappearance looked bleaker and bleaker. Her family, who were proactive in the search, were still keeping an open mind. Quote, "I have a strong faith that we will find her and we will find her well. That's the only way you can be," end quote, said her father, Russell. The search was intensified even further when Felicia's photograph was featured on billboards along the heavily travelled Interstate 95 along the East Coast. They were displayed between Baltimore and New York City, along with information about Felicia's disappearance and a phone number to call in tips. Quote, "Our most important resource in solving this case is the public, and this should help," end quote, said Baltimore police spokesman Anthony Guglielmi. The billboard space had been donated by Clear Channel Communications, one of the nation's largest radio station companies. By this point, many of the locals were still proactive in the search for Felicia, dedicating their time to handing out missing person flyers and attaching them to windows and lampposts.
Nearly a month since her disappearance, and posters showing Felicia Barnes' photo are still up in the Reisterstown Square apartment complex. Kevin Fleet says if someone takes them down, he'll be putting them back.
I have two daughters, 118, 123, and it hit me right here in my gut.
Fleet has even searched with his dog along railroad tracks that run behind the apartment complex.
Whoever done it, you know, I mean, like you say, whatever you do in the dark, come out in the light. You know, so it's going, you know, I just hope they find her alive.
We're all in this big rock together, and the more people care and the more people get involved with a situation like this, it's the better.
I would still keep looking, you know, I mean, How can you stop? It's impossible.
Baltimore police soon admitted that they were basically at square one and that their investigation into Felicia's disappearance had turned up no clues as to where she was. The FBI flew in two helicopters that were equipped with advanced technology to help police, and a 24-hour hotline was implemented for tips. 35 out of the 70 homicide detectives in Baltimore by now were working on the case, as well as detectives from missing persons and district squads, as well as agents from the FBI's Crimes Against Children Unit, as well as the Maryland State Police. Baltimore police also admitted that they were completely perplexed by the lack of physical evidence in the case. It literally appeared as though Felicia had vanished without a trace. Then on the 7th of January, police said that they were now focusing on two possibilities: that somebody had either done something to Felicia, or that somebody had taken her out of the area. Focusing on these two theories, police now wanted the disappearance of Felicia to reach nationwide news, not just local news. By now, only a handful of television networks had reported on the disappearance, including a brief mention on CNN and on Good Morning America. Information about the case was now being distributed to virtually every media outlet in the nation, in the hopes that mainstream media would pick the case up and report on it for it to reach a wider audience. Competition for limited time slots on news shows can often be fierce. However, the perception that such shows overwhelmingly feature missing white children was not far from the minds of those who worried that Felicia would be overlooked because she was African American. Moreover, Baltimore was known for its high crime rates and impoverished citizenry. Sadly, a lot of news outlets seemingly weren't interested and very likely shrugged Felicia off as a teenage runaway. Quote, "I don't know why this case is any different than the Natalie Holloway case. The only exception is that Felicia was in Baltimore and she's from North Carolina." America rallied around Natalie and CNN aired hourly updates. "In my case, I'm just asking that Felicia's picture be put up and it be noted that she's missing and in danger," end quote, said police spokesman Anthony Guglielmi.
Where is Felicia Barnes?
Her disappearance has been reported in local media and on NBC's Today program and CNN, but it hasn't been much of a story nationwide.
A spokesman for the Baltimore Police Department says he thinks this case of a popular straight-A high school student who simply vanished might have received more national attention if the victim had been white.
I think the question has to be asked. I mean, again, it's not my position. I don't know what goes into these decisions, but this is Baltimore's Natalie Holloway case.
A number of representatives from different news outlets declined to discuss the issue, but said that Felicia's disappearance had happened during a heavy week of political news that they said was dominating coverage, and essentially, Felicia's case had been put on the back burner. Janice heavily criticized the media for their lack of interest in her daughter's disappearance. The first 48 hours of a disappearance are crucial, and while Baltimore police were certainly proactive in the search for Felicia, the media had ignored her. While Felicia was missing, the media were running news reports on birds falling out of the sky in Arkansas and fish turning up dead in Maryland's harbor. Where was the national outcry for a missing teenager? Janice also said that she was remaining optimistic that Felicia was still alive, but was preparing for the worst outcome, just in case. Police, on the other hand, were pessimistic by this point. Meanwhile, a $25,000 reward was offered by Union Academy for Felicia's safe return. The reward money had come from the Phil Hargett Memorial Fund, which was created in 2010 after a charity auction. The fund was designed to help students at Union Academy in financial need. Officials at the public charter school said that the committee that runs the fund decided that the biggest need for the students right now was for their classmate to be found safe. Around the same time as the reward fund was announced, Felicia's half-sibling sat down with News Channel 36 to speak about their increasing frustrations about the cloud of suspicion that was seemingly hanging over the family. Since it had come out that Dina had numerous people in and out of her apartment while Felicia was staying with her, many speculated that one of them had something to do with Felicia's disappearance. Quote, "We don't know anything besides that she's gone," end quote, said Dina. While Dina accepted that she was more lenient than Felicia's mother, she said that she didn't do anything that would make Felicia vulnerable or put her in any danger. Major Terry McLarney, head of the homicide squad, said that he agreed with Dina's statement. Quote, I think whatever was happening in there is not going to be that far off the map for many people in their late teens. There was nothing really bad in there, end quote, he said. As the search entered the fourth week, it was revealed that Dina's ex-boyfriend, Michael, had hired an attorney. Other than that, however, no more information was revealed.
Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROSE.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, PROSE.com/morbidology.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now is not the time to be overpaying for razors at the drugstore. Harry's knows that sometimes it's better to stay indoors. That's why they ship directly to you, meaning that you can experience the quality of a Harry's shave in just a few days from the safety and convenience of your own home. Harry's makes award-winning razors along with an amazing and extensive range of grooming essentials, and they even offer premium blade refills as low as $2 each. That's up to 55% off compared to the price of the Gillette Fusion Pro Shield. Harry's is a return to the essential, quality craftsmanship at a fair price. They stand by their product so much that they offer a 100% quality guarantee. Now here's the good part. Listeners of Morbidology can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/morbidology. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. So head on over to harrys.com/morbidology to start shaving better today. The next 2 months passed with very few leads or tips. Nevertheless, the 24-hour tip line was still being staffed and each tip that trickled in was being thoroughly investigated. By this point, some national news outlets had picked up on the story, such as Nancy Grace and The Today Show. Still, the coverage was incomparable to the Natalie Holloway case, despite the fact that people were referring to Felicia as Baltimore's Natalie Holloway. In early April, Baltimore police announced that they were planning a mass search of Patapsco Valley State Park. As to why they were focusing on that area in particular, police said that they had linked a person associated with Felicia to the area, but would not elaborate any further. Urban search and rescue teams, the Civil Air Patrol, and 24 dogs joined in on the search, while police from several counties, FBI agents, the Maryland Department of Natural Resources and volunteers gathered to search the numerous ravines and rugged areas within the 16,000-acre park. Quote, "We're not going to, literally, leave a single stone unturned," end quote, said Police Commissioner Frederick Bielefeld. While police wouldn't elaborate any further, it was evident that they must have received a significant tip about the area, because such a massive search would not have been ordered without actionable intelligence.
In conjunction with the search, we are going to be doing a canvassing effort. This is all in relation to the Felicia Barnes investigation. We have been in touch with our law enforcement partners across the state, even the FBI, and we are going to be searching a wooded area in Metro Baltimore this coming Saturday. Through our investigation, we identified this as an area of interest. It was associated with one of the people of interest that we talked to, one of the 30 individuals that last saw Felicia, and this location was identified as an area that we needed to search. We have searched this area once before. The winter kind of got in the way, and the frozen ground and the snow limited our ability to search further, and now we are going to be doing a mass search in the area. All been investigated. They've all determined to be unfounded. So we are putting tremendous resources behind this effort. We're going to have roughly 200 members of the community canvassing, going door to door, putting flyers on cars, trying to generate as much intelligence as possible so that we can properly investigate the case. In addition to that, we will have this search effort in this wooded area. It will be led by Baltimore City Homicide, the FBI, our partners in all the surrounding counties have been involved.
At around noon on the 8th of April, a body was discovered in Patapsco Valley State Park. However, it was the body of a man, and his cause of death was determined to not be suspicious. The search of Patapsco Valley State Park turned up no clues as to where Felicia could be. But then, on the 20th of April, the body of a young woman was discovered in the Susquehanna River in the northeastern part of the state, around 35 miles from Baltimore. A second body, a male, was also discovered a few miles away on the opposite side of the Conowingo Dam. Both bodies were badly decomposed and both had been naked. They were sent for an autopsy and identification. While the body had not yet been identified, many speculated that the young woman was Felicia. She was the only young African-American female missing in the area. The following day, the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner for Baltimore confirmed that the body was Felicia. The match was made via dental records. The pathologist determined that Felicia's body may have been in the cold water since her disappearance and could have been placed in the water anywhere. The river spanned around 200 miles. The man who was found nearby would be identified as Darrell Harper, who had vanished from Richmond 5 days earlier. It would be determined that he had ended his own life and the two cases weren't linked. The recovery of Felicia's body closed one chapter in the case, but opened another, the search for justice. Quote, "This is the beginning. This is where it really starts. We're going to find out what happened. We're going to stick with it. Stay focused," end quote, said Russell. As the family were left to mourn, police were now exploring new leads. The Baltimore detectives who had been investigating Felicia's disappearance would now be joining the state police in a joint investigation to uncover how Felicia ended up dead in the water. On the 27th of April, a memorial was held at Lee Baptist Church. More than 700 of Felicia's friends and family packed into the church for a service they called a celebration of life. They were ushered inside and were greeted by Felicia's senior portrait, projected onto the wall. She smiled down with all of the hope of a teenage girl who truly should have had a bright future ahead of her. Inside, they reminisced about the good times and shared stories about Felicia and her infectious smile. Quote, "It's kind of hard to describe her. She was great. I think everybody in school had a memory of her," end quote, said Derek Ham. Outside of the church, they released purple balloons in Felicia's memory. Janice spoke to News Channel 36 and said, quote, I am honored to have been able to share such a loving child who brought so much joy to so many people's lives. I can't express how special she is. I'm not going to use the word was, because she's still special to me, and she always will be, end quote. The following week, it was revealed that Felicia's cause of death had been ruled a homicide. However, investigators would not release what killed her because they feared it would hinder the investigation. Felicia's half-brother, Brian Barnes, spoke with the media following the announcement.
I'm pretty sure somebody did something in the apartment or around the apartment. I mean, everybody to me is a suspect. Everybody, whoever came in contact with her, everybody who lives in the area, everybody who travels in the area. I mean, it could be anybody. It's a little bit of closure there. I just really, really pray that the police can use whatever evidence they found on her body or around or whatever the case may be to figure out what exactly happened and who took part in it.
On the 7th of May, Felicia was laid to rest. Friends and family gathered into the Springfield Baptist Church in Conyers, Georgia, to pay their final respects to Felicia. Her closed casket sat at the front of the church, surrounded in a large purple flower display. During the service, a slideshow of Felicia was played out, which consisted of photographs of her life with the song Don't Cry For Me by Cece Winans playing in the background. In early September, it was revealed that Michael had been questioned by investigators at least 8 times and that they had been suspicious that he was involved in Felicia's disappearance. Michael spoke out through his attorney, Russell Neverdon, and said that he wasn't involved. It was also revealed that Dina had sought out a restraining order against Michael after Felicia's disappearance. She wrote in her complaint, quote, I am fearful and unsure of what may happen because I am ignoring his unwanted contact. I am afraid that he, or someone he knows, may look for me, end quote. In April of 2012, Michael was arrested and indicted on account of first-degree murder in the death of Felicia. According to Russell, it was a long time coming. He described how the family had trusted Michael and said that he had been dating Dina for around 10 years. Michael and Felicia had become so close, in fact, that Michael had often referred to Felicia as his little sister. He also said that when Felicia vanished, Michael wasn't interested in helping search for her and acted extremely peculiar and suspicious and avoided people and phone calls.
It was 365 days ago, around this time, that we were calling and crying and they couldn't understand where Felicia was at. And still don't know what happened, but we're just praying that we get faith and we have faith that justice will be served.
As the case was moving through the justice system, it was revealed that the lead investigator in the case, Daniel Nicholson, had been suspended after he misused his police powers to search for his own missing daughter, who later turned up unharmed. Using his police badge, he had gained entry into a home where he believed that his daughter was staying. Following Michael's arrest, this led many to question whether Nicholson could be trusted in his investigation and his arrest of Michael. Michael's lawyer was quick to suggest that Nicholson had crossed the line once in the case of his own daughter, so he may have done so in other cases. Towards the end of April, Michael's bail hearing revealed some more information about the case. Prosecutors announced that they speculated that Michael had asphyxiated Felicia in Dina's apartment and then stuffed her body into a large plastic tub. They also said that neighbours had witnessed Michael trying to move the large plastic tub that was evidently heavy. According to Michael, however, the plastic tub contained his belongings since he was moving out. Between July and September of 2010, prosecutors said that Michael and Felicia had exchanged a number of text messages, and Felicia had told another relative that Michael was making her feel uncomfortable. His bail was denied. In May, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley signed the Felicia Barnes Bill, a bill that was designed to improve coordination between law enforcement and community groups when a child disappears. The bill would require state officials to publish a list of missing children and annual statistics. Then the following month, Michael pleaded not guilty to the murder of Felicia. Shortly thereafter, the trial was postponed after both the prosecution and the defence said that they had thousands of pages of evidence to sort through and needed more time. Finally, in January of 2013, the trial began. Right off the bat, prosecutors announced that they had a witness who said that he saw Felicia's body in Dina's apartment. They described how on the day that Felicia disappeared, Michael had called James McRae, a petty criminal who was currently serving time in jail. They alleged that Michael had asked James to come to the apartment, and once here, Michael directed him to the bedroom where he claimed he saw Felicia's body on the bed. The defense refuted this, calling James, quote, a liar by all counts, end quote. According to prosecutors, however, James had gained nothing from coming forward, quote, James had no time, cut off from his sentence, end quote, said prosecutor Lisa Goldberg. The prosecution also accused Dina of being too permissive with Felicia, stating that, quote, she treated Felicia like an adult girlfriend and not a teenager, end quote. Prosecutor Goldberg told the courtroom that there was a lot of alcohol in the apartment and Felicia was permitted to drink. Then on the 13th of June, 2010, when Felicia was up in Baltimore visiting Dina, there was a changing point. On that night, Felicia, Dina, Michael, and Michael's younger brother went streaking. Then when finished, they recorded an explicit tape, which included underage Felicia. The prosecution described how on the tape, when Michael was kissing and touching Dina, he was staring directly at Felicia. After that night, Michael and Felicia exchanged 1,300 text messages. While the messages couldn't be recovered, the prosecution said that the number of messages indicated that Michael was obsessed with Felicia. The 15-minute explicit tape was shown to the jurors. When Prosecutor Goldberg asked Dina why she had let her teenage sister partake in such a video, she said, quote, I wasn't thinking, end quote. After recording the tape, Dina said that she witnessed Michael try to touch Felicia in a sexual manner. She said that when she confronted them, they both brushed the incident off. When Felicia went back home, Dina and Michael became distant, but Felicia and Michael stayed in contact. Then when Felicia returned to Baltimore in December of 2010, Michael and Dina finally ended the relationship, and he was in the process of moving out when Felicia vanished. Dina told the courtroom that on the day Felicia disappeared, she had gone to work that morning. Before leaving, she had noticed that Felicia was asleep in the bed with Michael's younger brother, Dylan Davis. Then, at around 3:30 p.m., Dina received a random phone call from Michael, telling her that he wasn't going to work that day. He typically worked from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. When Dina arrived home from work, she found her apartment empty. She described how she called Michael, but he didn't pick up the phone. Instead, he sent her a text message saying that his battery was dying, but asked her to keep him informed on Felicia's whereabouts.
I called and asked him to come around. It took him, I couldn't find him. He was like, well, do you want me to come around there? Do you want me to come over? Okay, keep me updated, keep me informed. It was his brother or sister. I would have been out there in my car driving around looking. I would have come right away and I would have been looking.
According to defense lawyer Neverton, however, quote, the state rushed to judgment. The evidence will show that Felicia Barnes was a victim of her circumstances, but not a victim of Mr. Johnson, end quote. The defense also emphasized that there was no sign that Felicia had been choked, and there was no physical evidence that could tie Michael to her death, just circumstantial evidence. Early on in the trial, the defense reprimanded Detective Nicholson and contended that his actions during the search for his own daughter indicated a pattern of bending the rules. They accused him of antagonizing Michael and his family during the investigation into Felicia's disappearance and death. The trial took a dramatic turn when James McRae took to the stand. He claimed that Michael confessed to him that he had forced himself on Felicia, and when she started to cry, he strangled her. He claimed that Michael then called him and asked him to come over to the apartment. James said he told Michael to turn off his cell phone so that he couldn't be tracked by GPS and said to dispose of Felicia's body in water so that his DNA couldn't be retrieved and so that, quote, the fish will eat it, end quote. James claimed he had come forward because his memory was, quote, weighing heavily on my mind, end quote, and that he did not receive any time off his sentence for testifying. The defense were able to poke holes in James' testimony by having him say that all of this took place before Christmas. Furthermore, Michael's defense would cast doubt on the time span during which Michael would have to kill Felicia, consult with James, move the body, and clean up the crime scene. According to the defense, it was a window of just 38 minutes. Quote, "It doesn't make sense because it's not possible," end quote, said defense attorney Tony Garcia. Dr. Pamela Southall, the medical examiner who conducted Felicia's autopsy, took to the stand where she admitted that it was possible that Felicia had died from hypothermia. She had concluded that her cause of death was asphyxia, a catch-all term that includes drowning, suffocation, smothering, strangulation, and other forms of oxygen deprivation. She said that it was possible to have a simultaneous death from drowning and hypothermia. When Judge Alfred Nance asked Dr. Southall if she had concluded that her cause of death was asphyxia because she couldn't determine another cause of death, she replied, yes. There was no evidence of any kind of external trauma which ruled out stabbing, shooting, or bludgeoning. Evidence was also presented that Michael was thinking of fleeing the country. As the investigation was closing in on him, he had texted his girlfriend, quote, "I feel like everything is about to hit the fan. I don't know if I'm ready to deal with it. I still have options, not many, but I feel like I should pack up and leave. I don't want to, but that's how I feel. I mean, leave this country, babe," end quote. According to Michael, however, he claimed that he had wanted to flee the country because he feared that he was being railroaded and would be accused of something that he didn't do. His phone had been tapped by investigators for 2 months. They had anticipated that they would capture him confessing to the crime, but no such confession ever came. Michael had only expressed his fear that police were trying to pin the crime on him. The communications were presented along with cell tower data from the day that Felicia disappeared. It showed that Michael's phone was turned off from 11:30 p.m. until 1 p.m. Felicia's phone was making and receiving calls until 12:30 p.m. and then her phone was never used again. Michael had told investigators that he left the apartment at 1:30 p.m. and then went to visit relatives before stopping at a Walmart. Phone tower data indicated that he was telling the truth and he was in the vicinity of the store, and then at one point, his phone pinged to a cell phone tower in Patapsco Valley State Park, where the mass search would later be conducted. The prosecution had to admit that at no point did Michael's phone hit a tower east of northwest Baltimore, and that they had no evidence to link Michael to where Felicia's body was discovered. They also admitted that there was no evidence that Michael had called James, like James had claimed. Following this, Circuit Judge Alfred Nance said that the prosecutors were proceeding on a circumstantial theory that caused him great concern. Seemingly, the jury didn't have the same concerns, and they found Michael guilty of second-degree murder. Felicia's family anticipated that this marked the end of a painful 2-year ordeal. However, those who understood the justice system knew all too well that the case had strong grounds for an appeal. The case had been extremely circumstantial, and lo and behold, almost immediately, Michael's defense filed for a new trial, stating that prosecutors improperly tried to bolster the credibility of James, who had testified that Michael asked him to help dispose of Felicia's body. As it turned out, James had testified in earlier trials and had been ruled an unreliable witness, yet the prosecution had violated rules requiring them to hand over information about a witness to the defense team. A new trial was granted, and it started in December of 2014. However, just before Christmas, a mistrial was declared after prosecutors played material for the jury that should have been withheld. The judge said that he didn't think the mistake was intentional, but said that it had tainted the jury. Just the following month, all charges against Michael were dropped after the judge cited lack of evidence. Prosecutor Goldberg didn't agree, stating, quote, "We don't have a motive. We don't need a motive. There is no boogeyman out there who took Felicia Barnes. The circumstances point back to the defendant," end quote. The following month, Michael was indicted in the murder once again, but almost immediately, the judge upheld the acquittal. In 2018, Michael was once again ordered to stand trial for the murder of Felicia. He waived his right to a jury trial and instead was tried by the judge. The outcome of the third trial was much like all of the other outcomes, and Michael was acquitted of all charges. Judge Charles Peters ruled that the state's case against Michael left far too many unanswered questions. Outside of court, Michael's defense lawyer spoke to the media.
We have at all times asserted Michael Johnson's complete innocence. We grieve for the Barnes family and this tragedy, but convicting an innocent man is not justice for Felicia Barnes. We are just so, so grateful that Mr. Johnson can move forward with his life as he deserves to do. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Michael is a free man, and justice has never been served for Felicia.
I can't even describe how painful it is. But ultimately, the thing that's the most painful, no matter what I've been through, is that I don't have my sister. I don't have, like, she was my best friend, and I don't have her.
There is a media fascination and saturation when it comes to missing white women. But sadly, the coverage is nowhere near the same when it comes to missing women of color. Too often, there is a complete double standard. Police activity and national media coverage truly are key when it comes to missing people. That isn't to say that if national media had reported on the disappearance of Felicia Barnes right away, that the outcome would have been any different. But maybe, just maybe, her body could have been found earlier, putting an end to the uncertainty that her family suffered for months. The tragic disappearance and death of Felicia was a sad reminder that more often than not, only missing white women become the object of media frenzy, causing women of color to be victimized twice, once by their abductor and or killer, and second, by the national media. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd like to take a second to say I hope everybody is staying safe during this pandemic. Over the upcoming weeks, I'm trying to put out as much content as possible on Morbidology, so everybody has something to read at least. I'm also trying to do some bonus episodes on Patreon and Himalaya Plus. We're all in this together. And on that note, a massive thank you to my new Patreon supporter, Michelle Pierce. I'm eternally grateful, especially during this tough time. I'd also like to ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please, please, please consider giving me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. It truly helps out. Big thanks to everybody who simply listened to an episode as well. The support is very much appreciated. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing podcast, Perhaps It's You. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Go.
Were you traumatized as a child by watching Unsolved Mysteries?
Do you like to judge facial hair?
Guess what?
We have a podcast for you.
Can you believe it? It's called Perhaps It's You. And it is an unofficial Unsolved Mysteries rewatch podcast.
We're your hosts. I'm Samantha.
I'm Liz. We're two cool mystery aunts. Not really. Watch an episode of Unsolved Mysteries each week.
And tell you about it.
We update you if any of the mysteries have been solved.
We rate the episode on a scale of Robert Stacks. We can give episodes a possible 5 out of 5 Robert Stacks, although it rarely happens.
Very rarely. We also complain about what everyone is wearing, and it doesn't really matter if you know anything about Unsolved Mysteries or not. You should tune in because it's the number one podcast on iTunes.
Yeah, you can find us on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, most podcast platforms. You can also check out our website, perhapsitsyou.com, or find us on the social medias at Perhaps It's You.
Yep. And
get out there and solve some mysteries, bitches.
Yeah.
Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on Pros is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using Pros and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, Pros is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. Pros is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, pros.com/morbidology.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.